Hello everyone and welcome to Eat Life News, a show dedicated to bringing you all the latest headlines, scoops and narratives going on in the crazy world of Ethereum. I'm your host Dennis Omer, we're joined by my co-host DeFi Dude and Lister in Brighton. I feel like a complete boomer this week when I learned that TikTok actually has over a billion monthly active users. I had no idea it was so big. I don't really use it, but this week it came across our radar in crypto land because they announced that they are entering the NFT space. They're basically releasing an NFT collection called TikTok Top Moments. And well, what they've decided to do is they're going to pick, actually they have picked six culturally significant TikTok videos. And these videos are made by, I guess, people who are pretty famous in general and also on the platform, like Lil Nas X, Rudy Willingham, Curtis Roach, and a few others. And what they're doing is they're releasing this collection on Immutable X and on Ethereum. And we mentioned it, Immutable X, many times before, an NFT-focused scaling solution for Ethereum. And they kind of suggested that this was just a start. There will be more to follow. There'll be more releases later on. But for me, it was really incredibly exciting to see that TikTok is embracing NFT after Twitter, Nike, Coke. Like, so many different companies have joined the NFT space over the last 5 to 6 months. And this is just one more step towards a broader acceptance of NFTs and of blockchain technologies into the mainstream culture. I was super excited to see that. DeFi Dude, what were your thoughts on this news article?
Yeah, personally, I mean, I don't use TikTok either. I know that the younger crowd just generally uses it a bunch. So personally, I think these, you know, this NFT thing by TikTok is really cool as far as like getting, I guess bringing adoption to the younger crowd, you know, just letting them know about NFTs, opening that access, and obviously just kind of bringing it to their attention more. I think it's, you know, again, it's not a surprise we're seeing these big companies do this kind of stuff. But I also do like that they kept it on Ethereum. You know, you have companies like Neopets or other brands, I guess, who have come to the NFT space and they kind of just like do or go where the money is or they, you know, whatever. So it seems like TikTok actually put some thought into it. You know, they are doing the Ethereum ecosystem, which is really cool as well. They're going to be bringing it to a billion monthly active users. So that's really awesome. And, you know, again, I'm not a big TikTok user. I'm not a big fan of TikTok, but I mean, I think it's cool. I think it's a great idea.
And I think many of us thought that DeFi would be basically spearheading that movement of crypto's, you know, march towards mass adoption. But looking at how fast NFTs have spread and what kind of companies and what kind of celebrities and just the whole ecosystem and just knowing that in the third quarter alone, NFTs have generated $10 billion in revenue. I think for that first initial kind of killer feature, I think more than DeFi, I think it's actually going to be NFTs. The mass adoption, I think, is orders of magnitude ahead of basically DeFi usage anyway. They're both going to grow, but this first move has actually been made in NFT. I don't know if you agree or disagree with that.
Yeah, and I do kind of agree. I mean, DeFi, I'm a big DeFi guy. Obviously, it's in the name. But I do think that like newer people come into crypto or kind of adventuring into this ecosystem. It's like it's a lot easier to get onto NFTs, understand them, you know, things like Fortnite skins, you know, owning this, either it's art or whatever it may be, is a lot more relatable and easier to like kind of grasp and understand than all this super fancy DeFi stuff and farming and liquidity and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah, I definitely agree. I think NFTs are kind of going to be that initial huge crypto spearheaded, you know, what spearheads crypto adoption over DeFi.
And I think going hand in hand, having both DeFi and NFT as kind of major growing sectors is ideal. You have NFTs for all the social stuff, that whole social layer, the meme economy or whatever you want to call it. But then you also have the financial stuff as well, you know, tools for people who want to lend, who want to borrow, who want to do leverage trading, and who don't want kind of intermediaries kind of taking off, take kind of intermediaries building systems that are based on the best outcome for the intermediary and not for the end users. So it's great to see that. And I think even our next article kind of touches upon that, right?
Yeah, so Bank of America, actually their research arm, they published a report recently, which is like incredibly bullish on crypto, surprise. And, you know, especially Ethereum, DeFi, and NFTs as well. So in the past, the bank, which in the U.S. at least is the second largest bank, they described how Bitcoin's slow, it's impractical. They basically always kind of crapped on Bitcoin all the time. So in this report, though, obviously they were very enthusiastic about the entire crypto space, so that's really good to see. They mentioned how the sector now is too large to ignore, go figure, and that the digital asset ecosystem is so much more than just Bitcoin. They also highlighted the potential for smart contract platforms like Ethereum to power a wide range of services, and they say, and I quote, "In the near future, you may use blockchain technology to unlock your phone, buy a stock, house, or fraction of a Ferrari, receive a dividend, borrow, loan, or save money, or even pay for gas or pizza." I think, you know, using it to unlock your phones might seem a little silly, but hey, like, who knows? They also highlight how DeFi and NFTs present the most innovation in the crypto space right now, and that NFTs, you know, was a surprise for all, which kind of, you know, did kind of blow up, and it's just been, you know, an amazing thing to witness. But overall, it was a pretty balanced report. They don't really gloss over the fact that there are potential roadblocks along the way, you know, threats of increased regulation, that kind of stuff after Gary Gensler and, you know, all those other things that we've been covering for the past few weeks and many times. So overall, though, they do believe that blockchain technology will provide disruptive innovation, similar to like computers, video games, smartphones, all of which kind of received criticism from prominent individuals, you know, in their early stages of their innovation cycles. And so one quote out of it that I actually thought was super exciting as well was, and I quote, "Despite rapid growth and market values on par with some of the largest public companies in the world, we believe the digital asset ecosystem is only getting started." The report notes, "We are beginning the long journey of covering what we believe to be the next generation of technology, blockchain-based digital assets and applications." So that right there, yeah, really awesome just to read coming from them. And like those quotes as well, it's just like really sends it home. I mean, again, with some of this stuff, not surprised to be seeing banks launching or, you know, releasing these types of reports in 2021 being bullish, you know, no surprise. But it is good to see.
Yeah, seeing that kind of validation from, let's say, the outside, from a third perspective, from a bank saying we're just getting started and this is the next generation of technology, that is so incredibly exciting. And, you know, this is the kind of passion that we felt, we've been feeling ever since we kind of fell down the rabbit hole many years ago. Many of us have been Ethereans and part of the crypto ecosystem for so long, and we've been passionate just because we know how groundbreaking, how promising this technology is. And if you think about it, we're still in version 0.1, maybe for some applications, version 1, let's say. And they're great. Okay, they're not perfect, but they do provide the fundamental value that was promised. As we said, removing the intermediary, building completely new economic systems and new economic mechanisms, using a whole new dimension of incentive to make these work and to make these function in a fair way. For us, that's incredibly exciting. So jumping back to the Ethereum blockchain itself, on the horizon, we have the first major upgrade to the ETH2 beacon chain. It's almost ready to go, and it actually has a go live epoch date, which is 74,000 something, and that's basically October 27th. So we have a few weeks left to go. Now, all the ETH2 clients, including Lighthouse, Nimbus, Teku, Prism, Dostar, they're all ready for this release. Yeah, and this upgrade is bringing many new improvements, and it's also seen as a, let's say, low stakes warm up to prepare all these developers working on the beacon chain, preparing them and the clients for the ETH1 and ETH2 merge that's on the horizon. We're thinking probably Q1, Q2 of next year we'll merge ETH1 and ETH2 so that, you know, we remove the ETH1 proof of work system and kind of combine it and integrate it into the ETH2 proof of stake system. So the developers have been saying that this upgrade is basically a warm-up to it. It includes many new improvements, including support for light clients, patches to incentives and inactivity leak, like all sorts of different technical stuff. So it goes without saying, if you do run an ETH2 validator node, then you have to update your client. Otherwise, you'll be stuck in an incompatible chain and risk being slashed and paying penalties. But I think anyone running a node would be aware of that. And there's also an $100,000 bug bounty program for anyone who can find any kind of vulnerabilities in this Alter upgrade. And we'll keep you updated on the progress on that front.
Yeah, and still in ETH2 related news, we did actually have a critical vulnerability, which was found in Lido, one of the largest ETH2 staking service providers out there. They have like over $5 billion staked, some crazy amount. So if you want to stake your ETH on ETH 2.0 and you don't want to run your own validators, you could always stake it with Lido or one of these types of providers who stake your ETH on your behalf. And in return, at least for Lido, they give you ST ETH, which represents your staked ETH, plus the reward that has accumulated there, you know, the interest you're earning or the rewards. So the good news about this vulnerability is that it had a low impact and only 100 ETH was at risk. In a tweet thread, they kind of outlined how the vulnerability could have only been exploited by the currently whitelisted node operators. So it wasn't like anyone could just come in and steal the money or whatever the exploit was. And because these operators are whitelisted and reputable companies, they were just very unlikely to exploit it. They've already committed to not taking advantage of the situation. And the team themselves have proposed two fixes. One's a short-term fix, and then another one is more of a long-term fix. In the short term, they're proposing a vote to lower the staking limits for all node operators to the level of currently staked keys. But the long-term fix is currently a work in progress, and it's going to be unveiled once it gets out of the draft stage. They haven't really shared too many details about that yet. The vulnerability itself also impacted Rocket Pool, which has postponed their launch. They were actually only a few days from launch, and then this vulnerability came live. So they postponed their launch to implement a fix for the bug. Lucky for them, it was prior to their launch, just before, so that's always good. And interestingly, the issue was raised by Dimitri, the founder of rival staking provider Stakewise. So kind of interesting, you know, another competitor almost came out with this vulnerability, especially like a couple days before Rocket Pool launched. That seemed a quite coincidence, but still, it's good that, you know, they're coming out with it. Stakewise could have exploited themselves or kept it to themselves. It's good to see them work together and things like this. So, yeah, just one thing to be aware of if you're using Lido or one of the those staking platforms. Funds are safe, but there was a small vulnerability over the past week.
Yeah, it's scary to think how if it was a more serious bug, there could have been $5 billion worth of ETH at risk. But, you know, thank God it was caught. And even then, the damage wasn't too much. I think at most at risk, I think you mentioned, was 100 ETH. And it looks like, yeah, Dimitri from Stakewise pointed it out, raised the issue, and now it's being fixed. Now, moving on to Layer 2 news, Starknet have announced that it's launching its alpha on mainnet in Ethereum in November. You may remember that the public testnet was released in June, and it supported fully permissionless general computation smart contracts. And since then, they've upgraded that testnet twice. So once to Alpha 1, let's say, that supported L1 to L2 messaging and on-chain data. And then Alpha 2 kind of brought in and introduced composability. Now, with the mainnet release in November, users will be able to take advantage of both of these features. And as usual, it's a guarded launch, which means that teams that want to deploy on their smart contracts on this alpha mainnet, they do have to be whitelisted. Plus, there's also this kind of disclaimer that there is no guarantee of backward compatibility, meaning if you do deploy in November, due to ongoing changes that will be required, there is a chance that you might have to redeploy again sometime in the future. Now, it's also actually cool to see that there's so many different projects working on building up the Starknet ecosystem. So you have Nethermind, for example, they're building the Solidity to Cairo compiler. Plus, they're also building Voyager, the Starknet block explorer. And I also saw that Open Zeppelin, Aragon, Equilibrium, and others are all building out the infrastructure piece for the Starknet ecosystem.
In other news, we've also got some cool stats on Ethereum that we can share with you. So Ryan Watkins from Messari, he actually posted some of these. And I just wanted to share some that I thought were pretty interesting and relevant. So over the past 12 months, Ethereum has settled $6.2 trillion in transactions. Like, that number right there, absolutely crazy. It's up 369% over 2020. And Q3 of this year was especially strong with $1.5 trillion settled alone in that quarter. So, yeah, really huge growth there. Very impressive. Some of the stats we saw as well was like EIP 1559 has burnt just under 500,000 ETH. I think at the time of recording, it's like 490,000 ETH, which is equivalent to like $1.7 billion. Just absolutely crazy. It's resulted in a 55% net reduction in issuance. So it's really cool to see, again, like all these growth metrics, all these metrics in general. I mean, everything's just pointing up. So,
yeah, like I think every metric I've seen for Ethereum has been so impressive over the last year. And, you know, it's like almost like the hockey stick curve that we're seeing. We're really picking up momentum, as we mentioned, with NFT and DeFi kind of spearheading that movement. And it's always a very bullish adoption indicator when Ethereum is being used within more, let's say, governmental settings as well. So one example of that is an interesting article we came across this week that the Swiss National Post Service is actually introducing an NFT crypto stamp on Polygon. So they announced it, I think, just a few days ago that the Swiss crypto stamp will be a digital collectible that's also linked to a physical stamp issued by the postal service. It'll be worth around 9 Swiss francs, so around $10. And the digital stamp, as I mentioned, will be issued on Polygon, and there'll be 13 different possible designs that can be collected, and then they can also be exchanged and traded. You'll actually be able to trade them on OpenSea or any other NFT marketplace. Now, it feels like they're doing a drop. There'll be, you know, out of these 13 possible design, like the rarest one will only have 50, and the most common one will have 65,000 copies. So, you know, there's 175,000 stamps. And you know, they're going to be available on November 25th. And I have a feeling people will be FOMOing into those as well, because that's super interesting. Like I would personally want to hold like one stamp, like for $10. Why not? Especially if there's only 100 and, well, there is quite a few of them at 175,000, but it's still a cool concept. And interestingly, Swiss Post is actually not the first national post service to explore NFTs. And they were beaten by the Austrian Postal Service, who not only this May announced that they'll be issuing some limited edition NFT postage stamps, you know, with NFC chips embedded into them, but they actually released the first ever crypto stamp back in 2019.
Yeah, I actually remember those Austrian postal stamps. And, you know, when NFTs blew up kind of in the past, year, I actually looked back on eBay. I was trying to find like a full set of those, and like I was just amazed at the time. For me especially, it's like I really like the NFTs or NFTs in general that have some kind of physical association. Like I know the metaverse, everything's digital, but still sometimes it is really cool just to have like that physical representation as well with that NFT. And so that's why I really like those postal stamps. I'm not like a huge stamp collector in general, but even non-NFT stamps, you know, from time to time, I've always picked up some cool ones. So yeah, I'm going to definitely be trying to get some of these just to add to my collection. And I guess we can cover some NFT news. So we do have some news from a competitor to OpenSea. It actually went public just the other day, known as Infinity.xyz. They're essentially OpenSea with lower fees and a token. That's, you know, as I've seen it highlighted as that. They both said they aren't a fork of OpenSea. They basically use the same exact contract, or not basically. They do use the same contracts as OpenSea. The main difference I've picked up so far is that the fee is 1.5% instead of 2.5% like on OpenSea. So you're saving a percent on every sale or purchase. So you're saving 1% on every sale or purchase. And the UI is different, of course, than OpenSea. You know, it's not the same website. And lastly that I saw is that users will be earning a token for using the platform. So there's always the running joke of when airdrop for OpenSea, or when are you going to have a token? They kind of front ran OpenSea. Kind of reminds me of like SushiSwap and Uniswap back in the day. Infinity, you know, is competitor to OpenSea. They come in. They're like, hey, we have lower fees. Hey, here's a token. And it's almost a vampire attack, because users are actually eligible for that airdrop by using the platform. So you're going to be rewarded with the airdrop to Infinity just by using Infinity. So like buying NFTs, selling NFTs. So it's almost stealing the users away from OpenSea to go and spend, you know, create more volume on this new Infinity. So as someone personally who uses OpenSea a lot, but also someone who sees all the issues OpenSea has had and doesn't fix, as well as complaints from others, you know, I think it's going to be at least interesting to see where Infinity can take it. I'm not rooting for one or the other. I just want to use what's best for me, the user. So it will be cool to see where Infinity goes from here and, you know, how OpenSea takes it. If they're going to be pressured to release a token or something, who knows?
I think these kind of projects are actually beneficial to the end user, because we'd mentioned incentive design earlier. So if you can design a system with a better incentive that gets people to use it and extract more value and it gives them back more value, then why not? I'm all for this kind of experimentation.
Next up on NFT news list, we do have some Habbo news. So Habbo recently launched their NFT avatar series. And if you aren't familiar with Habbo, it's an old browser-based social MMO game, which is a massive multiplayer online. It's an old browser-based social MMO game where you have your digital character, you know, your own little house or condo or whatever it is. You've got public places like restaurants, you've got clubs, I'm sure like libraries and all that kind of stuff where you can meet up with friends online, walk around, do stuff, drink stuff, basically living a life through a virtual world, you know, something that's gotten way and way more popular recently, the whole metaverse thing and all that. So this game was very popular in the early 2000s. Like I'm thinking, you know, when I was young, I was in still like middle school. This is the game that people were playing, this and like RuneScape back on, you know, this is before gaming was like really huge. So, you know, it was really fun. It was a great way to be social, get on with your friends, walk around, be a little virtual character. So yeah, they're introducing those same Habbo characters that everyone knows and loves and that still exist today. You know, the game's fully up, fully operational, except each NFT character contains a new item or trait that has never before been seen on Habbo. So you're not just getting the NFT though. In addition to them being the NFT, they're also offering you, you know, the ability to use this Habbo in the game. So this is going to be your character. That rare item or whatever, that's going to be introduced to the actual game through your NFT. I mean, you're going to own that item. And you're also going to get Habbo Club, Builder Club, room memberships, which is like $10 a month or some monthly thing. It's all free if you have the NFT. And some mystery job. So it's just really cool to see as someone who's like, I grew up on the internet, I grew up playing games, and Habbo especially, you know, wasn't one of my favorite games because it's more of a social game, but I definitely sunk a lot of hours into it. And I think for crypto, for social, you know, the metaverse, I think this is really awesome to see. I can't wait to see like crypto clubs and hangouts on Habbo because I already know they're going to come. So yeah, we'll be cool to see. And I like seeing more utility, I guess, incorporated into NFTs like this, being able to use them in different ways.
So would you characterize this as an NFT utility token? Like it's an in-game item, right? It's not like an actual unique piece of art, let's say, right?
Right. It's not art in a traditional sense. I wouldn't call it necessarily a utility token because it is really like it is your character. It represents, you know, like if your crypto kitty was
your full character.
Yes. So it represents your full character, but it also has items attached to it. So you can remove like your helmet or your hat or your sunglasses, even though they're on it. So those, yeah.
Do you know if they're using Ethereum or something else?
Yes. They are using Ethereum, which is also good to see. You know, Neopets, which is another one of my childhood games that, you know, very young for Neopets. That was before Habbo. But they actually launched an NFT thing and they just went right to Solana and stuff like that, which I'm not here to say, you know, Solana's bad or anything, but it's just like everyone's on Ethereum. NFTs are on Ethereum. So I like my projects going on Ethereum or, you know, making smart decisions, going where everyone is. So yes, they'll be on Ethereum. They actually put a little, it's not really a blog post, but the post about, you know, why they're launching NFTs. And it seems the team is actually like just generally enthusiastic about NFTs, Ethereum and all that kind of stuff. You know, one of the team members has bought a Bored Ape and that kind of stuff. And they've been playing around with NFTs. It seemed very personal. And it was just, yeah, it was cool to read.
Yeah. So would you advise like our listeners to FOMO, or is it basically something just for people who actually play the game? I mean, there's so much speculation in NFT space and everyone's trying to get into everything. Do you think at some point some characters will grow, like increase in value based on what the users have done with them?
Yeah, it's really hard to say. I would probably never advise anyone to buy something just because I would hate, you know, if something happens, whatever. So me personally, I've bought a couple of these, but it's also because I do like Habbo, at least back in the day. I can't see myself playing this too much once they, you know, incorporate the NFTs into the game, unless other crypto people maybe like start building hangouts and stuff on Habbo. So can I see it being used and, you know, blowing up? It definitely can, but can I also see a, you know, a place where they just kind of fizzle out? Like, yeah, it's really cool. Maybe like those who played Habbo are interested. I can also see a situation like that. So me personally, I do think they're really cool. I do love the extra utility. I personally have bought some, but I can't say, yeah, I wouldn't advise for or against, but if you're a Habbo fan from back in the day, it's worth checking out. It's really cool, I think. And next up in NFT news, we do have some Sotheby's news. This is, you know, kind of a recurring theme here with famous auction houses. So Sotheby's is welcoming their second NFT collection or sale to the auction house with their next collection called Natively Digital 1.2 The Collectors. So this collection focuses on the champions and luminaries, as they put it, who have shaped this industry through their, you know, curation of early stage, who have shaped the industry just by being early pioneers and this kind of stuff. You know, it focuses on the collectors and these people being curators, you know, early stage NFT artists and projects, I guess, is what this collection's about. So everything early stage, everyone who's kind of been a big NFT person early on. And so, you know, it features 53 different NFTs from 19 different collectors. It's got art from like Paris Hilton, Pleaser Dao, Steve Aoki, several other people. And just bear in mind, some of these are just collectors, so you'll see some names that like aren't actual artists, but you know, it is a collection, you know, by some collectors who have been there from early on. So really cool to see, of course, another NFT auction, especially one that has so many different, you know, NFTs, different collections. I saw like Mooncats, I saw they had rare Pepes even were in there. I mean, it's got a huge range of different NFTs, so cool to see.
Wow, yeah. So this is, it's become part of the culture of, you know, society, I guess, right? And like, so when when these collectibles go on sale, I'm assuming because they're important, they're super expensive, is it like normal art where you might have a few hundred people or a few dozen people bidding on it, or is it likely that thousands of people will be participating?
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess it's something I'm also curious about. Like, compared to traditional art or, you know, stuff that gets auctioned on there, what do those numbers look like? Because I mean, I don't know the answer, but my assumption would be that a lot of people that are using those websites and bidding and that kind of stuff, they don't really, they might not understand, you know, what even is an NFT? Why would I want this? What's the point? So I would assume less people would be bidding on it just because they might not fully understand. Like, it's easy to see a painting framed on Sotheby's and like, oh yeah, okay, that's a painting and look at the dimensions, I can hang that on my wall. But then when you see just a picture of an NFT, it's like, you actually, if you don't know what that is, you got to dive into it, see what it's about. So I would assume less, but yeah, I'd be curious what those metrics look like for sure.
I have a feeling in the future though, just like we see paintings up on the wall in someone's house, you'll have like a digital frame that displays an NFT. I think there's already Ethereans that do that, right? I think Anthony Sassano in the background of his video, or maybe David Hoffman, like they have NFTs displayed.
Absolutely. I think that's going to be really cool. I mean, I've looked into digital frames. There are a few. For me, it's like the dimensions on some of my NFTs vary so much that I'd need like five different frames of all different shapes. But yeah, I definitely see that being a big, big thing in the future, you know, displaying your NFTs on a digital frame or whatever it is. I know Samsung has some. And
I mean, you're so right, because I know that Samsung actually sell a product line of TVs called The Frame, and it pretty much looks just like a wooden frame, but it's a super high quality screen. It's like, I think 4K, and you could easily display art on that with high fidelity. You could easily display NFTs on that. And it's actually designed for that as well. It has this kind of digital art mode built into it. So, yep, that's pretty much the future. So as you can see, dear listeners, we've talked a lot about NFTs just because so much is happening. We talked a bit about DeFi as well, about you know, post offices coming into the space, banks being super bullish on it, the biggest platforms in the world like TikTok and Twitter starting to get involved. So overall, we're super, super bullish. And on that bullish note, we wrap up another week of what's been going on around the world from Ethereum and crypto. Thank you for joining us, and until we catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone.
This podcast is supported by the awesome team at Kyber Network. For more information and to find out how Kyber Network provides liquidity to over 100 different dApps, wallets, and exchanges, check out kyber.network.